Welcome to episode 9 of the Variable Podcast. This is your host, John Bragel, and this week we have the opportunity to hear from therapist and post-producer Saritha Rothermel on a handful of topics related to therapy, anxiety, filmmaking, and more. Saritha and her husband, Michael, own their own post-production company called Chaio, that's C-H-A-I-Y-O, and they have also become good friends of mine since launching the Variable community in February 2022. If you want to check them out or drop Saritha a line, their website is chaiocuts.com. So these topics of therapy and anxiety pop up quite frequently inside the Variable community, so I wanted to crack the door open a bit more to our podcast listeners in hopes that you all get something out of the conversation. I should also mention that this podcast was extracted from a live event in our community, so that is why you will probably notice Saritha or I addressing others throughout the podcast. For the first half of the podcast, we learn a bit about Saritha, her background, and her thoughts on therapy. We then dive into the topic of anxiety and why so many filmmakers are familiar with it. And then the last 20 minutes or so of the podcast, Saritha takes us through three different guided mindfulness practices for working through anxiety. Before we dive in, I want to mention that if any of the topics we discuss in this episode resonate with you, I'd love to invite you into our wellness community for filmmakers at wearevariable.com. If you have either tried therapy yourself or are curious about it, chances are that you will vibe well with our community. And that's all for me for now. I really hope you enjoy this conversation with Saritha as much as I did. I'll begin the interview in just a few seconds. I guess for starting out, what age and how did you become interested in mental health and helping out others with their mental health?
That's a great question. I feel like I've always been a pretty intuitive kid, like from forever, just thinking about my relationships and my friends and growing up. And so that's always been true. Like, I've always been really interested in people's stories and obviously also my own, and all the experiences that I've had has really informed just how I see the world with so much brokenness and so much pain. You know, part of my interest in mental health also was like informed by like faith background growing up too. And I guess for me, like that desire to help people has always been there. And it's kind of grown into like wanting to see the world. I guess I'm an idealist in some ways, wanting to see the world and like as a kinder place and wanting to help people be able to be kind to themselves and others. Like, that's really important to me. So I did my undergrad in social work and then I did my master's in counseling. It's kind of been like a lifelong journey in a way.
Were you always the friend that was sort of listening to your other friends' issues and problems and trying to help them through things?
Yes. Yes. And I don't think at the time I recognized that as a role I was playing, but looking back, definitely I was like the listener, the one who was like, you know, unfortunately a part of the drama, but it wasn't really about me, but I'm just like listening to friends, mediating. Also definitely in my family system, I played that role. Like, my parents never had a happy marriage, but they were together and they said, you know, they were only together because of us, me and my sister. And I was definitely, when you look at family systems, like I was the peacemaker, the mediator. You know, I always could see my dad's perspective and my mom's perspective. And I just remember even as a kid being able, like just thinking, oh, I just wish that you could understand what the other person was saying or where there was coming from. So I think our families definitely also shape the roles that we take and we end up in the world too, for better or worse.
At what point did you realize that you could sort of take these skills that you had
and
apply that to a career?
Probably when it came time to like pick college, I would say. Like, I was originally going to be in a completely different field. So I was looking at architectural engineering. I was a super nerd in high school. Like, I took AP calculus and AP physics and loved all of that. Still do, but I don't really do any math anymore, to be honest. Not very much, definitely not physics. But so I was looking at those programs, I'd been accepted to the program at Drexel, but wanted to, like, you know, I was doing some soul searching at the time and talking to teachers at my school, and was just like, what do you actually want to do with your life? And of course, at 17 or 18, you definitely know what you're going to do with the rest of your life, right? So they're having all these, you know, conversations with you. And I was like, well, I really want to, like, work with people, you know. At the time, I was really interested in relief work. And they're like, well, have you heard of, like, the field of social work? Which was completely foreign to me at the time, especially growing up in Thailand. That's, like, not really, that wasn't really, like, a program or degree you could study in Thailand. And I was coming to the U.S. for college. So that kind of shift my trajectory in terms of, oh, I could actually study more about this. The things I've always been interested in as far as helping others, you know, working towards a better world, so to speak. And then, like, really working with people and their pain and the things that they struggle with. Headed, switching majors in college kind of set me on a different trajectory.
What would you say you love the most about your skill set as a therapist?
The ability to sit with somebody and enter into their story and to, like, reflect back to them in a way, like, their pain, but also their resilience and their strengths. And to be able to share space with somebody in such, like, a vulnerable and intimate space. Like, I feel really honored I get to do that in my work as a therapist. And I think that is a skill that I wish all of us could learn to do for one another. As far as even, like, public discourse in the world today, like, I think the value of having a conversation that's filled with empathy, kindness and respect is so hard to come by, but in that therapy space, like, I think the skill set that I've learned in my training is how to enter into that in a way that is gentle, but also really respectful of the person, like, as a whole person, with their pain and their hurts and the things that they're struggling with, as well as equally, right, their strengths and how those maybe really difficult experiences might inform who they are today and how they can grow and move forward. Like, I love that. That's what I love about therapy, is, like, being able to be with the whole person and have them start to see themselves sometimes for the first time, you know?
Who would you say is, like, or what's a better way to put this question? Like, who do you think therapy is right for?
Short answer, everyone, but not everyone per se. Everyone with the caveat that you have to be in the right, I think, time and space in your own personal journey and your own life to want to do the work. Mm-hmm. I talk to my clients all the time. So I work with a lot of, like, teenagers and middle schoolers. A lot of people are scared of them. I love them. They're the best. I also inevitably work with a lot of adults because I work with parents a lot as well. Nobody should ever be forced to come to therapy. Nobody should feel like they are required to do therapy. But I think if you're in a place in life where you're ready to, you're noticing maybe things come up for you that might be difficult, or even you're noticing patterns maybe in how you react to things, and you're like, I'm curious about that. Like, if you have the curiosity and feel like you're in a place where you have the bandwidth to look at that more, or if you're in, like, a lot of pain and you're starting to realize, like, I don't want to live in this way anymore, therapy is kind of that perfect time and space to start to do the work. So I think everybody would benefit from experiencing therapy, and hopefully you have a good therapist to work with, because that informs, I think, how you think about your mental health and therapy in general. But it's also, I think you have to be in a place in life where you're ready and willing. And it's, you know, you find the right fit to do the work with you.
Yeah, I resonate so much with that. And I believe that too, like, the curiosity and the bandwidth, because I remember having to create a lot of space because I had people telling me that I should, over and over, like, I should explore therapy. This is now 8 years ago, and I had to actively create the space so that I had the bandwidth so that I could even be curious.
Well, Right. Because sometimes you're in survival mode and, you know, a lot of stuff comes out when you're in therapy. And sometimes, like, it brings up a lot more stress and a lot of kind of, you know, big emotions that you kind of have to have the bandwidth to also manage because you still have to function in your life, right, outside of therapy.
What would you say is, like, some of the resistance that you've experienced people having to therapy, whether in your own private practice or just generally? Like, why might people resist trying it?
Yeah. I mean, I have a lot of people in my life that I love that I, like, have talked, had those conversations with, too. So it's a kind of an interesting question. I think sometimes people feel like I already have people in my life that I could talk to about my problems. And I think that's good and positive. And at the same time, I think therapy is a little bit, can be a little bit different in that hopefully you have this collaborative experience with your therapist who can help you walk through and maybe explore other aspects of your life in a way that might not be as possible in your personal relationships. Or sometimes it's really, you know, in our therapy relationships, like sometimes we talk about our personal relationships with our therapist, right? So sometimes, like, it's helpful to have that separation. So sometimes people feel that way. I think some people have had really terrible experiences with therapy, and I don't blame them. Not all therapists are good therapists. Not all licensed therapists are good therapists. Or even if they may be fine, it's not the right fit for you. And so for some people, that experience might be tainted because of not the right fit. Or they had a weird experience with a therapist or a really terrible experience with the therapist. So that happens too.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the other resistance is, like, bandwidth, you know? I am in therapy myself, and I have had maybe, like, I'm trying to think, two other therapy experiences prior to this one that was not great. And I think that part of that had to do with also me not being in a place where I was ready to do the work, or had the bandwidth to really do the work on myself. And so some of that resistance has to do with maybe, like, my stubbornness around, like, it's fine, you know, I'm okay, it's fine, I'm surviving, or I'm, like, I can deal, or I'm coping fine. We have to kind of get to a place maybe when we're like, I'm really done with feeling the way that I'm feeling.
Yeah. Now,
recognizing, like, this really isn't working for me.
Yeah, trust is such a huge part of the process, because I know I went through, I've had a few therapists at this point, but the first one I went through a lot because I was bringing my own trauma and reflecting it onto the therapist. And then I saw that therapist as a threat because of something that happened early in my life. So I would never connect with them. I didn't trust them. I thought they were out to get me. And none of that was true. It was just me reflecting trauma. And then I left, found another. And now, literally, probably 7 years later, I'm finally able to realize, oh, wow, I pushed that therapist away because of, you know, my own unprocessed trauma, essentially.
Yeah. And, you know, the fascinating thing, too, is having been, so being a client and being a therapist, so being in both roles myself, having experienced that, like, I think that your relationship with your therapist in therapy, in a way, it's, you bring into it kind of how you view or how you've experienced your other attachment relationships, right? Because therapy is so, it can be so intimate and vulnerable and healing in that way, that even, like, how you relate to your therapist is a reworking of maybe the baggage that we all bring into our other, outside of, like, in our real life relationships too. That's part of what can be so powerful about therapy, is the nature of the therapeutic relationship itself can be really healing, right? That makes sense to me.
I want to point out one thing that I've noticed that for me has been really effective with the two great therapists that I've had is this feeling of never being judged.
Yeah.
Just they're actively listening, asking powerful questions, but never making me feel, you know, like a bad person or belittle me or whatever. And that, to me, that's how I associate, like, I think a therapist is good for me, for my experiences. That's a big part of it.
That's awesome.
So let's see here. I want to transition a bit into filmmaking because you also are a post-producer. So how did you find yourself in the position to be a therapist and a filmmaker? And then on top of that, like, how do you feel those two complement one another?
Yeah, that's a great question. So it's kind of a fun story. Prior to going into film, I was working like full-time as like a clinical director of an inpatient unit for kids and teens. So like very high stress, 24/7 care. And it had reached a point where I recognized that it wasn't going to be sustainable, especially because then I was pregnant during a pandemic managing the unit. So it was like very overwhelming. My husband, Michael, has been in film for a very long time, and our, you know, our careers have been kind of parallel. And so during the shutdown, it was kind of funny because, again, he was non-essential, so he had to be home, and I was essential, so I was going in every day for several months. Once we had our son, I just came to a realization that, like, I think I need a shift in my life. I had loved working in mental health for a long time. But had reached kind of like a point of burnout, worked through burnout, then got promoted. It was very intense. So having our son Wendell kind of like reoriented everything. I knew I needed to shift gears. It just so happened that summer after our son was born, Michael was working on, so he's an editor. He was on the editorial team for like BTS for a feature film. So it was very fast-paced and intense. He would basically like work around the clock or like then spend the night at the director's house, you know, and we were just kind of like my son and I, Wendell was, I think, like 3 months or something like that. We were just chilling because I was still on maternity leave at that point. We would go and visit Michael. Then, long story short, a friend of ours was originally the producer of that project. She went on maternity leave and asked if I could just help like finish things out. So it was supposed to be a couple of weeks of post-producing. And she was like, your skills are transferable. You managed an entire hospital unit. You can manage this project. It should be easy peasy. Everything's getting wrapped up. So that's kind of how it happened. We were already there, staying on the property of the director's house. I jumped on board thinking it was going to be, she said, a few emails, right? And then it ended up being like several weeks, the rest of the summer of post-producing. I had never really done anything like that before. And we had a great time. We delivered everything. I learned so much. That's one way to learn is to jump in and pretend like you already know what you're doing and ask a lot of questions. After that experience, Michael and I kind of realized like, oh, we could work together. That's never really been something that we had truly explored before. We've always had shared interests and supported each other. But after that experience, coupled with the fact that I'd had space for the first time in my life to explore a different like way of living, different things I could be interested in, it kind of created space for us to start our, to like really, you know, dive into what is now our editorial studio. So that's how I got into film.
Amazing. Yeah. A great story.
Yeah. Yeah.
How do you see them like complementing, those skill sets complementing each other at this point that you've been doing it for a while now?
Yeah, it's I think so much of producing and working in filmmaking is like big picture, you know, you work with people and you get to tell stories that are really meaningful, hopefully. And I think a lot of what I do is really trying to work with people towards a goal, which is not dissimilar to what I do in mental health. The difference obviously is that it's more of a macro level. You obviously work with all sorts of personalities and you have to use your people skills for that, for sure. But yeah, I think, you know, what I would love to do and continue to do is, like, even the projects that we pick, I hope that we can pick stories that are meaningful to tell and that are important. As far as moving the world towards, again, like, I think a kinder place, more beautiful place, like, that's important to me. But as far as the everyday work, it is like trying to help a group of people get towards the goal they want to get to.
That's awesome. I love that, the macro and the micro, like you said.
Yeah.
Transitioning to the topic of anxiety, because I think that was the main thing we want to talk about here. Yes. But I think it's important for us all to kind of have a working idea of anxiety, or like a way to identify what anxiety is. Is there like a textbook way to define anxiety, or?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the DSM kind of definition for anxiety would be, it's actually simpler than we think it is. Like, it's excessive worry and fear to the point that it interferes with your ability to function in your daily life.
Mm.
So, you know, all of us, I think, have had worry thoughts, right? Or different things that we might be afraid of, or things that really overwhelm us. But kind of the clinical definition is when all of those thoughts and feelings get to the point where they interfere with your ability to kind of go about your day or work in your job or be in relationships. That would be kind of the definition of anxiety.
Gotcha. And are there any like examples that come to mind of how different people you've worked with experience anxiety?
Yeah. I think that a lot of times, and I'm sure you guys on this call might be able to relate to, like, when we experience anxiety, it has a physiological component to it. So you might notice, like, your heart is really racing, your breath might be, you might have shortness of breath, you might feel this sense of, like, stress reaction. And in our brains, we kind of enter into, like, a fight, flight, or freeze mode when we experience high stress, right? Coupled with, like, the feelings of, and the thoughts that might feel like they're, like, spiraling or they're coming out of nowhere around, like, things that could go wrong, things that you're worried about, or what-if scenarios. Those would be kind of some of the examples. Like, a lot of clients that I work with, and even in my own work, in my mental health, like, I notice that whenever we talk about anxiety, it's often helpful to think about how it feels in our body, because you know that you're not necessarily at baseline when you're feeling anxious. You could feel that your body's reacting differently than when you're calm.
Would you say anxiety is a pretty standard human experience to have, even in like some small degree?
I think so. And especially, I think in current society, like in our like 24/7 internet sphere, I think we've created a much more anxious like society as a whole. Things are really fast paced. There's like a ton of stimulus and information coming at us, more than we can really process at times. But also, there's so much going on in the world that I think as a whole, we're more anxious than we used to be, because we need things more instantaneously. We always feel like we're behind. If we're on time, we're late, right?
Yeah.
It's kind of like the culture that we're in right now.
Yeah, I also feel like anxiety is becoming such a shared human experience, largely because of COVID as well. Like, yeah, something that revokes your sense of control over your life has a tendency to create anxiety, from my experiences.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And it's especially like the pandemic is like has been a universal experience for all of us. And something at that scale to experience all together and to feel like we haven't had control. Yeah. I think affects us all for sure.
I guess as like a filmmaker yourself, like, what ways do you see or perceive anxiety impacting filmmakers specifically?
I think film is a really tough industry to be in because it could be so personal, To me, filmmakers are artists, business people, and also, like, you have to be exceptionally good at your own skills and be a great team player, which is, like, really tough. You have to create work that is so personal and meaningful to you and have a point of view, and also have thick skin, because you have to answer to often, like, clients or, you know, an audience or people who will criticize your work. So it's kind of feels like right ground for, like, feeling or having anxiety, because there's so much around identity, failure, performance, even the nature of if you're freelancing or if you're a small, you know, business in any way, like the business part of finding work and doing good work and, you know, delivering work, like, all happens within the same person oftentimes. A lot to manage for one person.
Yeah, I feel like when I was kind of thinking through this a little bit before the call, the idea of performance anxiety came to mind.
Yeah.
Just expectations of different collaborators that we might be working with. Like, I know, for example, I just got off a call before this call with a director that I've wanted to work with for a long time. And I can perceive that their expectations are really high, but I know our budget's very low. I barely have a crew. Our locations are not great. And so I get off the call and I'm just like, my world kind of vacuums in. And I just notice this feeling of like, oh, I don't have time to eat lunch. I don't have time to do this. I don't have time to do that. Everything just converges. And it's kind of like a state of panic.
Huh?
That's how I experience anxiety. And then if I'm not careful and like, go outside and take a walk or take a few deep breaths, that can just go on and on and on.
Yeah.
Been periods of my life where that's gone on for weeks and months even. But thankfully recently, with the help of some tools and things of that nature, I've been able to acknowledge the anxiety, but
yeah.
It certainly doesn't mean that it doesn't exist.
Yeah, for sure. That makes sense. And I think that's almost the nature of film sometimes, especially in commercial spots where the turnaround time can feel really fast. And so I always feel like I'm problem solving and I don't have enough time. And I'm always a little bit nervous how it's all going to come together. Mm-hmm. And that can really, I think, spike your anxiety.
Yeah.
Too. And then you're finished and you're like, yay. And then you do it all again, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. It is crazy.
It just keeps going. Yeah.
Maybe it makes sense to go into like some tools a little bit about that help with anxiety. And then,
yeah, I would love to do that. And actually, if you guys are open to it, I'd actually would love to do some exercises together. I think it's helpful for me. Obviously, this call is not a replacement for therapy, but I feel it's kind of helpful. I feel like I'm doing it with friends, and that's a good practice for me too, as I work on my own mental health. But one of the things that I found for me and with working with clients is introducing like mindfulness-based exercises. And if you're not familiar with mindfulness, how I would define it is like it's the practice of paying attention and having awareness of yourself in your body, like what you're noticing physically, emotionally, and the thoughts and feelings that come up. But it's really doing that in a non-judgmental way and helping to really ground ourselves. When we're anxious, I definitely get like that tunnel vision buzziness, kind of the way that you describe it, John. We're kind of out of our bodies because we're spiraling to like, it's like the mushroom spiral of doom, right? You go from like, this situation just happened, and now I do, what if this happens? Okay, then what if that happens? And then the next thing you know, like you're 10 thoughts ahead of what the current situation is. And we're not connected to our bodies when we're super anxious. So I've really found that, you know, some mindful practices helps me ground back in my senses. Functionally, it helps my brain, the part of my brain that's actually thinking and logical, it shuts down when I'm anxious because I'm in like, again, flight or flight mode. So when we can practice grounding ourselves or practicing mindfulness to raise that awareness, we can help reactivate the part of our brains that helps us think through things, which is what we need really to be successful in life. So some really like basic ones, like I think about scenarios for filmmaking. Like if you're like coming off of a really intense call, or you're like the night before a shoot, going into a shoot, right? And I'm sure this is a classic example of like, it's like the night before like a big thing that you're doing and you're trying to sleep and you can't sleep. Or you're like leaving a situation and you're like, oh, I'm going to go to dinner with my family after this like crazy client meeting that's super overwhelming to me. How do I switch gears and be present with my people? One of the practices that I do, it's like I call it like a container exercise. So if you all close your eyes, take a deep breath. It's cliche, but it's super helpful. Like really notice your chest rising. And notice the air coming out of your body. We're going to start by grounding ourselves and orienting how it feels in our body right now. Just notice how your body feels. Notice the thoughts that might be coming up. Not judging them. Just practicing. I want you to picture, if you can, creating a container in your mind. I want you to build a box. It can be made out of any material you want, as long as it's really hardy. I personally like glass. Make it as big as you want or as small as you want. And I want to make sure that your box has a lid and a lock. It can look however you want it to look. Once you have the box, take any anxious thought that you have, anything that's stressing you out, overwhelming you. Could be big, could be small, like whatever you're comfortable with. Just start to put it in your box. Close the lid. Watch it stay in that box contained for a little bit. Anxious thoughts have a way of being kind of sticky. So they may try to escape, and that's okay. We don't have to judge ourselves for that. We're just practicing putting our thoughts in the box, closing the lid, watching it separate from you, seeing it contained for right now. Stay with me for a couple of breaths. Next, I want you to picture creating a wall. It can be as high as you need it to be. It can be as thick as you need it to be. Out of whatever material you need it to be. I personally like a plexiglass wall. It goes straight to the ceiling. It's like 20 feet tall. I build my wall up to where all of the stressful thoughts that I have, the things that I have to do today, things I haven't done, things that I did that I feel regretful about, all of those swirly thoughts, I put them on the other side of my wall. They're still there, but they don't have to be a part of me right now. Just picture yourself standing on the other side of the wall for now. Not judging yourself. Just noticing what happens to your thoughts when you're able to separate them from you. just for this moment. Whether it's a box or a wall, start to kind of notice what it feels like to have those thoughts separate from us for this very moment. And then come on back when you're ready. So, like, obviously, our problems and our anxious thoughts are worth working through in the moment, right? But sometimes, like, to me, this is great in, like, a crisis situation where you're like, I don't quite have time to process all of this right now. I have to do the next thing. And it's helping me switch gears. I'm not getting rid of them, but I am saying I have separation. My thoughts are just thoughts. They don't define me in this moment. My feelings come and go, and I can ride that wave, but I can contain them for now. And then when I'm ready and I have a little bit more bandwidth, I can come back to them if I want to. So another one I really like, I think we'll just do, this one's a little bit more body-based, so I think it can be helpful. It's called, have you guys heard of progressive muscle relaxation? Okay, PMR. So that's really helpful, again, when you're feeling like I'm out of my body and I'm like really stressed out. I often ask people to close your eyes. I'll close mine. It always starts with turning your attention to your breath. So take a deep breath. Notice your chest rising. Notice what it feels like in your body right now. If there's any part of you that feels tight, go ahead and relax your body. If there's parts of you that feel pain that you can't relax, just noticing it, not judging it, and letting it be. I want you to turn your attention to the top of your head. Deep breath in. Raise your shoulders real high, like real tight. And then breathe out and relax your shoulders. Breathe in. Shoulders high. Breathe out and relax. Breathe in. Raise your hands up to the ceiling. Breathe out. Relax your arms. Breathe in. Arms up. Breathe out. Relax. Breathe in, arms out, spread wide like an eagle. Breathe out, tight squeeze like you're giving yourself a hug. Breathe in. And breathe out, squeeze. Breathe in and clench your knees together, like you're squeezing a ball between your knees. Feel that tension. Breathe out and relax. Breathe in, squeeze your knees together. Breathe out, relax. Breathe in, point your heels to the ground. So like you're a ballerina. Breathe out, relax your legs. Breathe in, point your toes again. Breathe out, relax. Take a couple of deep breaths. Plant your feet firmly on the ground beneath you and just notice what it feels like on your feet. Notice the breath in your lungs. Notice your body taking up space right now. And come on back when you're ready. I think a lot of us hold tension in our bodies more than we realize. I definitely hold a lot of my stress like right in my shoulders. They're always like hard as rocks. And even that simple body scan from the top of your head to your feet kind of helps your body release that. And can be really helpful when you need, again, a moment to ground yourself when you feel like you're kind of out of your body. And sometimes, again, you have to find what works for you. I'm the kind of person who needs to contain at first.
You need to make sense.
But a lot of times, some people need to, again, physically ground first. That's what we're trying to do. Like, think about yourself almost like, okay, I'm not an electrician, but like, you know how you have to ground outlets? It needs to go somewhere in the ground. Like, literally, you have to do that with your body when you're feeling that anxiety come on. So oftentimes, again, connecting to, like, doing simple stretches, going back to your breathing helps you to wring out that stress. I think we probably have time for one more. This one is one of my favorites because it combines gratitude practice with mindfulness. I was really inspired by when we watched the Stutz documentary and we talked about it, some of the tools that he shared. After watching it, I don't think this was fully the exercise that Phil Stutz used, but I kind of adapted in my brain and I've been doing it with my clients and I've really loved, they've really kind of like shared that it's been good for them. So a lot of mindfulness practice for me is picturing like guided imagery practices, which I think for a lot of creative people can be helpful. Because you already have rich inner worlds. So it's kind of wonderful in that way. So we are going to go on a little field trip together. Close your eyes. Always, always, we start with breathing. So take a deep breath. Breathe out. Feel free to do it audibly. That's when we know it's a deep breath. Just take the deepest breath you've taken all day today. And feel it rise in your diaphragm. I want you to picture just a beautiful spring day like today. The weather's perfect. It's sunny. The sky is blue. You're outside. And you can pick, you're riding a horse or you're riding a bike, whichever feels comfortable to you. You're riding down this beautiful country path. You hear birds. You feel the sun shining on your back. As you're riding down this road, I want you to picture the people that you love on both sides, under the trees. Think of the faces of the people that you love, that you're grateful for, who are there for you, people who support you. They're standing there on both sides, cheering you on. Notice the wind in your face, the speed of your riding. You're headed towards the finish line. And in this moment, I want you to picture the love of the people who are important to you, or the things that are important to you. Just want you to feel that fuel you forward. Pushing you, cheering you on, supporting you, feel that gratitude and love like a force as you ride towards that finish line. Take your time to get there. With the sun shining and the beautiful spring day. Feeling the wind in your face. Hearing the sounds of people who love you. Taking you to the end. Cheering you on. Stay in that moment for a few more breaths. And come on back when you're ready. What was that one like?
All right. I'm hopeful that if you made it this far, you feel relaxed and rejuvenated. A big thanks again to Saritha for taking us through these practices. If you're interested in tuning into the community conversation that unfolded after Saritha and I's conversation, check us out at wearevariable.com. Again, you can check out Saritha's work at chayocuts.com. That's C-H-A-I-Y-O cuts.com. And that pretty much wraps things up. Thanks again for tuning in, and stay tuned for episode 10 next month.